A Catra podcast conversations for the curious, essential knowledge, simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of the Catra AR.
Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We take those huge stacks of information shaping our world and, well, boil them down to the essential knowledge you really need. And today, have you ever used a free online service and just got that weird feeling, that little sense of unease, like maybe you're the actual product, or, you know, that you're part of some big experiment you never really agreed to? If that sounds familiar, then this deep dive is absolutely for you. We are plunging right into a truly landmark analysis of the hidden economic engine driving our digital lives. Shoshana Zuboff's massive work, The Age of Surveillance Capitalism, our mission today. Simple, but kind of huge. We want to pull out the core ideas, the surprising origins, the key terms, and explain why everything online feels so unsettled. It's way beyond just data privacy. It's about decoding this deep architecture of control.
Yeah, and that's the first thing to get straight. Zuboff isn't just talking about Facebook or Google Maps specifically. She's identifying a whole new economic logic. She calls it a mutant economic logic. Mm-hmm. And her argument is stark. She says this logic, surveillance capitalism, is an existential threat, not just to privacy, but to human freedom, to democracy itself. We're looking at a system of power, not just some new tech tools.
Right. And the authority she has, it gives her analysis so much weight. Shoshana Zuboff, she's a professor emerita at Harvard Business School. Her perspective is just, it's incredibly deep, historically speaking. She was already studying how information tech impacts society way back in 1988, her book In the Age of the Smart Machine. So she's not just reacting to the latest app. You know, she's been watching this unfold for decades.
Exactly. That academic rigor combined with this historical view, it's powerful. She sees parallels to, say, industrial capitalism, how it disrupted everything before society and laws eventually kind of caught up. It lets her look past the shiny screens and the code and see these underlying economic forces capturing human experience itself, turning it into a commodity. She basically gives us the language, the vocabulary to even talk about this thing.
Okay, let's unpack this then. Let's start right at the beginning.
Right.
Where did this beast, as you might call it, come from? It wasn't some grand blueprint for world domination, right?
No. Not at all. It was born from crisis, actually. A specific business problem at Google right around the dot-com crash in the early 2000s.
Uh-oh.
They were under intense pressure. They had to show they could make money.
Yeah.
And they had all this extra data, the digital exhaust from searches stuff, not strictly needed to give you the search result. And they realized, wait a minute, we can just take this data, analyze it, and turn it into something valuable for advertisers. That pivot basically saved Google and accidentally created the blueprint for this whole new economy.
Wow. So let's zero in on that raw material. The fuel for this engine, Zuboff calls it behavioral surplus. This seems like the key term we need to grasp.
Absolutely fundamental. Behavioral surplus is the gold mine. It's the data scraped from our online activities that goes beyond what's needed to improve the service for us.
Okay.
Like use a map app. The route it gives you. That's the service, the surplus. That's the tiny hesitations you made, the exact speed you drove, the way you cut through that parking lot, maybe even your phone's battery level while you did it.
Yeah.
Stuff you didn't consciously offer, stuff they didn't need for the map.
But hang on, if I'm using a free email or a free map, I kind of know there's a trade-off, right? I know they're using my data. I clicked agree on the terms. Isn't that just fair exchange?
But that's the critical distinction Zuboff makes. It's the difference between using data to make the service better for you versus secretly diverting that extra surplus's data to build a different product, a product that predicts your future behavior sold to someone else entirely. Think about it. Traditional capitalism extracts labor or natural resources. There's usually some kind of visible transaction, some consent, even if flawed. Surveillance capitalism extracts human experience itself as a free resource.
And that gets refined.
Yeah.
Using machine intelligence, AI, that gets refined into what she calls prediction products.
Prediction products. So they're not selling data about me. They're selling certainty about what I'll do next.
Precisely. Predictions like you're 87% likely to click this ad or buy that brand of coffee next week. And these prediction products, they're traded in behavioral futures markets.
Behavioral futures markets. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Markets trading in guaranteed human futures. And the whole thing hinges on what Zuboff calls dispossession.
Dispossession.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning our consent isn't real. How did they manufacture that?
Well, mainly two ways. First, those impossible to read, constantly changing terms of service, click agree. Or you're locked out of modern life, basically. It's not meaningful consent.
Right. Nobody reads those.
Exactly. And second, just habituation. You get used to it. The constant tracking, the targeted ads, it starts to feel normal, inevitable, even though, and this is crucial, it was a choice made by companies, not some technological destiny.
Okay, this is where, for me, it starts to get really unnerving, because the system doesn't just stop at predicting what we might do.
It can't. The competitive logic demands it. If you're selling guarantees about future behavior, you need to make those guarantees stronger and stronger.
So you have to move from just knowing
to making sure we actually do the thing they predicted. That's the leap from mere data collection to behavioral modification and actuation.
Actuation, like activating a behavior.
Yes. They start using sophisticated techniques from behavioral psych, game mechanics, nudges, designed to tune us to herd populations towards profitable actions. They engineer our digital environment to shape our choices, often without us realizing.
And it's not just happening on our screens anymore, is it? This spills out into the real world. The case study she uses is, well, it was surprising to me, Pokemon Go.
Pokemon Go. It's a brilliant, kind of chilling example, developed by Niantic, which spun out of Google. Zuboff analyzes it as a massive real-world experiment in what she terms economies of action.
Economies of action, meaning?
Meaning using game mechanics to generate real-world economic activity. Companies like Starbucks or McDonald's literally paid Niantic to make specific real-world locations into Pokestops or gyms, places players needed to physically go.
So the game wasn't just about catching virtual monsters.
No. It was a mechanism to physically steer millions of people, their bodies, to specific commercial locations, generating foot traffic and revenue. It proved you could actively shape real-world behavior on a massive scale in real time.
And that shows how this moves beyond phones.
Absolutely. It's the bridge to the Internet of Things, smart homes, connected cars, anywhere data can be harvested and behavior potentially tuned, turning the physical world into this giant, profitable Skinner box, essentially.
Which leads to the kind of power the system creates. She gives it a name, instrumentarian power. We often think of surveillance like Orwell's Big Brother, but she says this is different.
It's a really crucial distinction. Big Brother cared about your thoughts, your soul. It wanted ideological conformity, enforced through fear and punishment, instrumentarian power. It's indifferent to what you believe.
He doesn't care if you love the party, just
that you do what it wants you to do, predictably, profitably. Mm-hmm. It operates more like tuning an instrument, hence instrumentarian. It wants to automate your behavior using remote control, using the environment itself as the control panel.
So Big Brother watched you, this big other, as she sometimes calls it. It plays you.
In a sense, yes. It aims to shape outcomes without overt coercion, often beneath the threshold of our awareness. It sees complex human experience as just raw material to be processed for predictable, profitable output. Its power wielded remotely, often without accountability, purely for economic gain.
Okay, let's pivot then, the so what question. What does all this mean for us, for you listening, for our lives, our societies? This creates huge asymmetries of knowledge and power, doesn't it?
Massive and deeply corrosive. The entire system thrives on opacity. The surveillance capitalists know almost everything about us, our moods, habits, vulnerabilities, minute-by-minute locations.
While we know next to nothing about them, their algorithms, who they sell the predictions to, how exactly they're trying to nudge our choices.
Exactly. And that imbalance, Zuboff argues, is fundamentally incompatible with democracy. If you're constantly being subtly steered and modified by hidden commercial forces, how can you be a truly autonomous citizen?
It undermines that basic capacity for self-determination.
Completely. It erodes what she poetically calls the right to the future tense, the fundamental human ability to imagine your own future, make choices, make promises, create your own life story. If powerful unseen forces are constantly predicting and guaranteeing your next move for profit, you lose that agency, that core freedom to define yourself is compromised.
There's a quote from the book that just hits hard. She says, "It is no longer enough to automate information flows about us. The goal now is to automate us."
Chilling, isn't it? It reframes human beings as resources to be automated.
So, okay, what do we do? If this is a huge economic system, just, you know, deleting an app or using a VPN feels inadequate, like bringing a water pistol to a wildfire. What are the practical takeaways here?
Well, Zuboff stresses it has to start with awareness. We need to fundamentally shift how we see free services, recognize them as extractive operations. And yes, while digital hygiene helps a bit, it's not the solution. She argues for creating sanctuary, deliberately carving out device-free spaces and times in our homes, our communities, places where the instruments of observation and modification are simply off limits. It's about reclaiming cognitive liberty, mental space.
That feels tangible, something you can do right away. But she also says individual action isn't enough against this kind of systemic force.
Right. Because it's an economic logic, the solutions have to be systemic, political, and legal. Just like with early industrial capitalism, we need new laws and regulations. And crucially, she argues the focus shouldn't be on data ownership, which kind of accepts the premise that our experience could be property. The fight needs to be about outlawing the core mechanisms, the secret harvesting of behavioral surplus, and especially those behavioral futures markets, banning the trade in human futures.
So it's not about getting paid for our data. It's about stopping the commodification of our future selves altogether.
Exactly. It's about protecting human autonomy at its root.
You know, the one thing reading her work that gave me a sense of maybe hope, it was her insistence that none of this was inevitable. That surveillance capitalism isn't just what technology does.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It wasn't some unavoidable outcome of digital progress. It was a series of specific business decisions made by specific people at a specific time, driven by financial pressures. Technology can serve human ends. This model chose to exploit human ends.
And because it was chosen.
It means we can choose differently. Collectively, democratically, we can decide this is not the future we want and build guardrails. Which really leads to the final thought to leave people with. Zuboff frames this as the defining struggle of our time, analogous to the fight against the robber barons and the excesses of industrial capitalism a century ago. It's a fight for self-determination, for the right to shape our own lives and societies, free from this pervasive invisible control. And like that earlier struggle, it will require collective awareness and collective action.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.